edition of the New Africa Business Association. Blog Radio, Network Marketing and Community Group Investments. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum. Normally, we will be on the station talking about our different businesses and talking to different business owners, but tonight, we're going to put business to the side, and we're going to honor our heroes, those who have served, those who have given us the freedom to be in business and to have the liberties and to pursue our happiness of just being in business. So tonight we are going to honor those who have given us those freedoms, our American veterans. And we'll be right back to start our show in just a moment.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Veterans, I want to remind you that this is an open mic show. We do have our special guest that we're going to be bringing on here in just a few moments. But before we bring on our special guest, I want to invite all of the veterans. You can call in and participate with us. The call-in number would be 657-383-1372. I will repeat that number, 657-383-1372. We would love to hear from any veterans that wish to participate in tonight's program. At this point, I want to introduce our guest and our co-host for tonight. I want to see if we have with us Imam Abdul Rahman Sharif. Brother Rahman, are you with us?
Yes, I'm on the line.
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Rahman. How are you?
Alaykum as-salam. I'm doing fine, my brother. How are you tonight?
Everything is good. I just want to just say Imam Abdullah, Brother Rahman Sharif, he's with the United States Marine Corps. He's a Vietnam veteran. And, of course, he also received the Purple Heart. Brother Rahman, I want you to just, before we let you start off with tonight's show, we want to also that we have, see if we have ma'am, Lyndon Bilal. Brother Bilal, are you with us?
As-salamu alaykum.
Well, alaykum as-salam, Brother Bilal. Looking forward to, he's one of our co-hosts tonight. We're all going to get started. Also, do we have Imam Chaplain Abdullah, Chaplain Rashid Muhammad. He's a Lieutenant Colonel. Brother Muhammad, are you with us? Say again, Brother Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad. Thanks so much. Again, are there any other co-sponsors that I haven't mentioned? If so, go right ahead and mention your names and give us just mention your names real quick and we'll get started.
You have Brother Fontel Givens on.
Say it again.
Yeah, Brother Fontel Givens on.
Brother Givens. We thanks right here. Brother Givens, you're with the United States Air Force Reserve.
Correct.
And so we're glad to have you. Any other, Sultan Muhammad, are you with us?
Brother Bino.
Yes, sir.
And yeah, Imam Saleh Sharif.
Oh, Brother Imam, I'm glad you're here. We're going to, the Imam is really the host of this show. I'm sitting here and having him, so I hope that he would call in. But Brother Imam, of course, welcome to the show and take over your show, please.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate everyone. We were going to be hearing from a Command Sergeant Major. I just left him, by the way, so he's en route. We just left a meeting. So he may not be able to make it with us today, but I just want to say that at some time in the future, we do want to hear from him because he served for 32 years in the United States Army. He had the highest position enlisted as a Muslim across all the branches of the service, and he had command over about one-fifth of the U.S. Army, and he's currently working also still out of the command as a civilian now, where he retired out of. So at some point, we want to hear from him because of his longevity and his interaction and his position. So we look to have him at another time. But we are so glad to have with us the four co-hosts and guests, Imam Abdul Rahman Sharif, Lyndon Bilal, also assistant and also the commander of the Muslim American Veterans Association, national organization that has several posts around the nation. And we have Fontel Givens, who also served active duty for a while. He did a term of active duty, and then he decided to continue serving and join the Air Force Reserve, which is what he's doing right now. So we're glad to have him with us as well. He also happens to be my son-in-law, and so even more so pleased to have him following on the legacy in the Air Force. And then we have our dear chaplain, also Imam, retired as a lieutenant colonel for the United States Army, the very first chaplain in America's history. The first Muslim chaplain in the United States Armed Forces in America's history with us today. And he did several years, 25, I think he did about maybe 20-something years, and we'll get more from him in a few minutes. But I'm very glad he's able to be with us as well because we may not have had him due to some other conflict. So we appreciate him being on with us. So what we want to do now is hear from each of you, and we will be interrupted every now and then for to take commercial breaks. But starting with Imam Abdul Rahman Sharif, and I want to let everyone know also that he is also my uncle. And he had a lot to do with me going into the Air Force as well. And in time, maybe we'll present some of that piece of my history and what caused me to serve for 30 years in the United States Air Force. And I joined in 1979. But Abdul Rahman Sharif, why do you see service to veterans nowadays to be something that's very important?
Well, I guess right off the top, first I said, As-salamu alaykum, thank Allah for allowing me to be here. We have a saying that all gave some gave all. And the all is the actual physical life. But we all took an oath to serve this country, to obey the orders of our commanding chief, to protect it from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And there were a lot of skills learned. And most of us, at least in my time frame when I joined, 1966, we were young. And we just had this idea for me at that time and for many of us who went through training at the same time, it was this idea of service in the cause of freedom and liberation. And even though we knew at that time we were having problems in America, it was something about just the word freedom and liberation. It was something about seeing other people suffering, being dominated, to the best of our understanding, we thought it was just a good cause to really serve the country, serve the ideals of what the United States of America said it stood for, and in fighting, in protesting, and engaging in civil rights walks and marches for our own equal opportunity here in America. It was just something that many of us just gravitated toward doing, and now we see how in serving our country we have established a platform for many of the liberties and the freedoms that not only this country enjoy, but many countries around the world enjoy. And it's etched in stone. We didn't realize it at that age, but we know now that all good deeds are etched in stone. It's not just the service we did to America, but the service we did for the whole of humanity.
Imam Sharif, how old were you when you joined?
I was 17, right out of high school, as a matter of fact. I graduated. I joined early with parental consent. I was 17, graduated in June, and I think maybe 30 days later, I found my way on the bus to Paris Island. As with most recruits, 6 months of training. 30 days leave. I was still 17. After 30 days leave, I reported into Camp Pendleton for another 3 weeks prior to going to Vietnam. I turned 18 the day I reported in. And the receiving sergeant said if I reported in a day early, I would have not have went to Vietnam. But they would give me 6 months elsewhere because you got to be 18 to go. So 3 weeks later, I was on what we call the Big Iron Bird on the way to Vietnam. And probably at that time, I probably was maybe the youngest person in Vietnam.
Yeah, so right now on the phone, I think you are in, among those who are participating today, you are in the war that was the oldest of the wars that of those who participated, being Vietnam. Now, in Vietnam, I want to also let our listeners know that Imam Sharif, he is also a Purple Heart recipient. Imam Sharif, can you explain what that means?
Purple Heart recipient, basically, you've been wounded in combat, wounded by enemy fire. Mine was 82 mortars and 152s, which are basically communist-oriented weapons. We were in the area of Khe Sanh. Perhaps many of you have heard of it. Some of you have heard of it. Khe Sanh borders Laos and Cambodia, and we probably sometime was in Laos and Cambodia. But I had a round or two to land right at the top of my foxhole. And it felt like it was going to land right on top of my head. And you can imagine how that many of you, you have experience in some type of artillery-related activity, the louder that round sounds, the closer it's coming to you. Or the closer it sounds, the closer it gets, the louder it sounds. So it begins to sound like a loud whistle. And the louder that whistle is, you know, this is close. This is real close. And I kind of had a what you might call a preeminent vision. I say, we're going to get hit, you know, and we did. But with myself and two other Marines being in the middle, I got hit. Basically, I was holding my helmet on. If not for my helmet, I would have got hit in the head. And I may not be on this phone conversation, but I was holding my helmet. So I got hit in the neck, right forearm, wrist, right thigh, and left hand. And spent 2 months in the hospital recovering, first in Vietnam Naval Hospital in Da Nang, and then the rest of that time was in Guam Naval Hospital. And then the remaining week was at the Camp Lejeune when they brought me back via plane. So that's the story for me in a nutshell.
Yeah, all in the service. And you, like as you said earlier, you said all gave some, and so you're one of those who gave some.
Gave some.
And you say some gave all, and you mentioned that as well. Chaplain Abdul Rashid Muhammad.
Yes, assalamualaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you again for being with us. Now, as a chaplain, how close were you to those who were actually in the fight?
Well, let me first say assalamualaikum to all distinguished brothers who have served our country. I'm grateful to be on a program with those who have served. I had a couple of situations when I was deployed to Iraq that were pretty dangerous. I was deployed to Afghanistan also. And we had a dangerous situation one evening flying into Jalalabad in a Chinook helicopter. For those of you who are familiar with the Chinooks, they make a lot of noise. They're the largest helicopter that the Army has, carries 16 soldiers. And we were flying from Bagram to Jalalabad, and we took fire. Normally the Chinooks, the back end is open, so we can actually see the rounds at night from where the rounds were coming from. And no one got injured. Our gunner was doing his job quite well, which obviously helped our situation. Our gunner was in the back door, and he was returning fire. And it was an eye-opening moment, you know, when you're under direct fire like that, you know, you really don't know what the outcome is going to be. But as many of the soldiers said afterwards, they were happy that they had a chaplain on board. And I was more happy that that God was on board. I didn't feel like I had any power that could have prevented anything, but we all came out of it unscathed that time. So I was grateful to Almighty God for bringing us back down to the ground and safe where we were. So that was one situation, and then we had other situations when I was up in Taji, Camp Taji, right outside of Baghdad. We took mortar rounds at one point quite frequently. And there was one episode one morning. There was a what we called a IVVED, a vehicle-borne IED. And it exploded, killed about 30 people, some Iraqis that were coming into our base as they did every day. And we had to, of course, go to that area to provide any type of support that we could provide. But it was, again, another eye-opener of where I was and what was going on. But, you know, alhamdulillah, it was a good situation to be in the sense that, you know, having a little understanding of the language and the culture, I was primarily in a role where I was, you know, helping the Iraqi civilians and helping our medical personnel to bring the medical treatment, needed medical treatment for those that were injured. But after a while, you learn when you're in a situation like that. I'm certain Imam Sharif can also agree with this, is that after a while, when you've been in a situation like that and you know you have so many months or days or whatever is left, you don't even think about the dangers anymore. It becomes almost normal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and we really appreciate you sharing that, give the listeners an idea of the kind of things that the service member goes through. I want to ask you, Chaplain Rashid, as a Muslim chaplain, were you looked at any differently from any other chaplain?
Yeah, I would say so, and I think that most of the time that was a good thing. Because being that we were in an environment where most of our soldiers didn't understand the culture and didn't understand the religion and a lot of the ways of the people, it actually was a good place for a Muslim chaplain to be. And I'm certain that if we ever get a chance to get some of our other Muslim chaplains who served in Iraq, I'm certain that they will have a similar observation that we were really in a good place at that time. As dangerous as it was and as uncertain as war is, we really provided, I thought, a great deal of meaning and purpose for not only our troops but also for the Iraqis that were working on our FOB or forward operating base. We had masjid. We had the first masjid that was established there. In fact, Geraldo Rivera came and did a story when this masjid was opened. And so, yeah, we certainly were looked at differently. And I think that had I not been Muslim and been like any other chaplain, that some of those things that were able to be accomplished would never have happened. My soldiers had a, I thought, anyways, a great deal of respect and regard for me. I was also a chaplain supervisor when I was over there, so I had the responsibility. I was a chaplain, so I had nine other chaplain assistants. I had eight people that I was responsible for.
That's quite a bit for a theater like that. So when you say your soldiers, you're talking about all the soldiers, regardless of their religion. Is that correct?
That I was responsible for also supervising. So it was a tremendous responsibility.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate you sharing that as well. I want to go now to Fontel Givens, an NCO, non-commissioned officer, currently in the Air Force Reserve. Fontel was in the active duty United States Air Force, and he got out, and then he decided to go back. So, Fontel, why did you go back?
Assalamu alaikum.
First,
I'd like to say, you know, we're pleased to be on this call. Please excuse any gap. For some reason, I'm having a bad connection. I think my local carrier knew I was going to be on the call today. But to answer your question, it was more of a pull, you know. Once I got out, I always had that, you know, I just wanted to come back for some reason. I really didn't understand why I wanted to come back outside the camaraderie. It was that need and want to serve. I found that when I was in a position to serve mankind, I felt when I was in a position not to, you know, it was more of a stale feeling. And I didn't always feel that way, but after sent to do. I had a feeling. Then once I got out, it was that feeling of something that you're missing and not knowing that you're missing it until you actually pinpoint what it is. So that's the reason I got back in. That it was, that call was feeling me to be in a position to serve men.
Yeah, now, Fonte, can you tell us about the kind of job that you had in service to the nation?
Sure. So I was there, you know, fortunately for me, you know, and all hats are tipped. My hat's tipped to you brothers who've been in combat. I didn't have to see any combat. But I was in jobs as far as being the leader, which is the Muslim chaplain, kind of as an official title, but that's when you actually don't have a Muslim chaplain on base, and they would actually give you the opportunity to use one of the rooms and hold Juma or Talim services. Also was a person who was responsible for determining the health of the fleet by putting together some type of statistical analysis program for the wing. And database management. Those are my core responsibilities while I was in the Air Force and currently still are.
Yeah, what type of unit were you assigned to? Were you assigned to an operational unit or support unit?
Well, active duty, I was assigned actually to a training base where we trained the fighter pilots to actually perform their missions. As a reservist, I was assigned to a support unit. We find supply C-130s versus the 22s, the F-18s, or the 60s.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Fonte, this is maybe a political question, but as one of the younger ones on the call today, among the service members that we have and the veterans, how do you take comments from Donald Trump that we've heard in the news? How do you take that? What do you think about that?
Well, the first thing, is not too foreign. You know, there's other folks out there like Donald Trump. It's just he's more more inclined to say things being in the position he's in. But the first thing I think is almost a laugh to me, because I think Colin Powell said it best when he pointed to one of our national cemeteries and where a lot of our fallen soldiers are, and you can see just as many headstones of Muslims as you saw other folks. So, which says that, you know, if Muslims, you know, we're fighting for the country just like everybody else. We have a stake here. You know, a lot of us was born and raised here. And not only that, this is the religion we chose. And this is one of, you know, being a religion that recognizes, you know, all the other religions is more of a joke. So, I say that to say that, you know, the comments that he says, it shows that he's really out of tune with reality. He's out of tune to do anything from a foreign or international perspective. And the fact that, you know, like just the comments about Muslims, you know, it shows that he's out of tune with a good majority of folks who support, defend, unite and contribute to this country. So it is more of a stand back, you know, standpoint, just to look at him and like, this guy's really crazy. That's how I feel about Donald Trump.
Yeah, we appreciate you sharing that. I want to go now to Lyndon Bilal, and I just want to let also listening audience know that Lyndon Bilal and myself were in the Air Force earlier around the same time. Actually met in the Air Force and also in the same Muslim community, and we both also have a lot of things in common. We both were in Turkey, and we both made the pilgrimage together, and this brother Lyndon Bilal, he and I were kind of locked going around the sacred house, and there was one point when he pushed me towards the black stone, but the crowd was so intense. I always remember that when he and I went there. In fact, we were part of leading the first military delegation to make Hajj, and this came after the first war. The Saudis had promised the Muslims who were part of the Americans that supported the first war that they would help facilitate them making Hajj, and we were part of that first group.
But Lyndon Bilal, again, he's currently the commander of the Muslim American Veterans Association. Now, he served on active duty with the United States Air Force, and now he's in that capacity. So Lyndon, I want you, if you could share with the listening audience, what made you now want to continue in this capacity as a service organization for veterans?
Yeah, assalamu alaikum. I believe it's just, just a natural occurrence of being a Muslim to serve. And I embraced Islam when I was in the military. So when I went into the military in 1980, I had not formally embraced Islam. I was on the path because my elder brother had embraced Islam, and I had come out of a lot of the jahiliyyah ignorance that I was in, going into that situation. But, once I embraced Islam, I consider myself having embraced it wholeheartedly. And at that point, once you become a Muslim, you need to be around other Muslims to keep you strong. You need to be around people who are about living the life of a Muslim. And, and coming into Islam, for me, that meant family life, getting a wife, having a family, and being a productive member of the community wherever I was. So I became a lay leader immediately after feeling that I had enough knowledge and confidence in my faith, and a lay leader.
Lennon, were there any chaplains in at the time when you became a lay leader?
No, there wasn't. Mm-hmm. And this is where in about 19, I'm going to say the mid-80s, we started
the
organization.
And I want to make that clear. I'm speaking specifically about Muslim chaplains. Just want to make that clear to the listening audience.
Yeah, so we started an organization, and when I came, I was in Turkey for 2 years, and I got stationed here in Washington, D.C. was my choice in a sense, because they had a Clara Muhammad school here at that time, and I had 3 children, and I wanted them to go to the Muslim school. And so I accepted this assignment here, and while I was here, Allah blessed me to meet good brothers like Imam Talib, some other brothers from Fort Bragg, several bases around here in Washington, D.C., and we started an organization called Muslim Military Members. And our number one priority was to get Muslim chaplains into the military, officially sworn in. And then Brother Abdul Rashid Muhammad, he became the perfect candidate for us to push forward and support. We were in uniform, and I was working at the Pentagon, so, I used whatever Allah had given me or put me to help advance that cause. And fortunately, in 1993, we had Imam Abdul Rashid Muhammad sworn in as the first one. But in 1992, while working at the Pentagon in the capacity of a lay leader, and I want to say me and Brother Ansari, a couple other brothers started the first Jummah service at the Pentagon. And it continues till today. But also in 1992, we hosted Imam W.D. Muhammad and boxing great legend Muhammad Ali for a luncheon at the Pentagon the day before the Imam became the first Muslim to open up the Senate in prayer. And so, I continue to strive to better this situation, because we're responsible ultimately, and we got a lot of work to do. And dedicated brothers like Quartermaster Abdul Rahman Sharif and Chaplain and Vice Commander Imam Talib Sharif and others, are professionals, and they understand, what our mission is, and we're trying to do what we can while we can.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate, too, what's happening, because I know we have several. We started out with one post, and now they have several posts, more than 10, we know. But, Linda, I want you to go back to something for a minute. You mentioned Imam Muhammad at the Pentagon. Could you share with us how he was received? Again, this is the son of an individual, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who, under his leadership, it wasn't encouraged to go into the military. And I want you to share, how was his son received, who spoke at the Pentagon before he was going to the Senate? Can you share with us how they received him?
Well, for the most part, I was surprised that at the time the Pentagon chaplain, Chaplain Esterline, and I had to work close with him as the lay leader, I was sort of surprised on how much he knew about Imam Muhammad already before me even, telling him about him. And he was very, you can go to YouTube and see the video, and you could see how he was very excited to be the one to introduce Imam Muhammad at this luncheon. And then there were some other officers there, but I want to say some of our comrades who were not necessarily in our association at that time, they didn't understand the importance of Imam W.D. Muhammad. But it came full circle several years later when I ran into some of them at an event, and Imam Muhammad was speaking at this event, and they were there. And Imam Muhammad always said that we need to introduce him to the public, because that's one of our greatest needs that we have, is to introduce Islam properly to the American public. And if we take that mission seriously, we will understand all the work that we have to do to introduce Islam into this so-called highly sophisticated and technological society, where the people think that they got it all, so to speak. So but for the most part, the imam, we asked him to speak on basically the principles of the religion, and within a very short speech, 10 to 15 minutes, Imam Muhammad did an amazing job of delivering that message of al-Islam. And then the following day, as I said, he opened up the Senate in prayer, and there were world leaders from all around the world at that event, and several other military brass came and attended that as well, and I could see their faces and have pictures on how happy, and I mean, they probably understood the magnitude of it more than I did. So
what year was that?
1992, February the 5th, 1992.
So let me go to Chaplain Rashid. Now, Chaplain Rashid, you were sworn in, I believe, was in December 1993. Is that correct? Did we lose Chaplain Rashid? We may have lost Chaplain Rashid. I want to go to Imam Abdul Rahman Sharif. You still with us, Imam Abdul Rahman?
Yes, sir, we're still here.
Yeah, what I want to ask you, when you went in the Marines, and you later came out, and as a member of the Nation of Islam, you mentioned about your service, you mentioned about why you served, all powerful reasons, consistent with why many young people want to serve their nation. And then you joined the Nation of Islam, and they had a different perspective on the military. I mean, how did you reconcile your service with the nation's position at that time?
Well, at that time, I really was not aware of a difference or a different perspective of the Nation of Islam and the military. Could have been naivety on my part, but, I was aware to a degree of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, et cetera, some of the beliefs of the Nation of Islam. But my awareness of any perspective on the military was not really that apparent. It's just that the Nation of Islam had a kind of magnetic drawing reality, what I saw in the discipline, what I saw in wanting to help and do for self, particularly among African-American people. And at the time, you see, 1966, we were at the height of a lot of civil protests. I was aware of a lot of civil inequality, et cetera. And if I can just reflect for a moment, I was in the 11th grade, I think, because I graduated at 17, so I was maybe 15 going on 16. We had to do a report on Julius Caesar and Iliad and Odyssey and Silas Mon and all these kind of reading reports, and it just wasn't clicking with me. We had to do like a report, write a notebook on the whole 6 weeks, and I wasn't doing it for some unreason. I wasn't trying to be bad or nothing. I just didn't want to do it, and the teacher asked me why, and I don't know if it was the Nation of Islam influence, but I said, I really don't see how this can help a black man in America.
Right.
I was 15 years old, and she looked at me, and she was young, just out of college, and like she was looking firm, but at the same time, she acted like she was trying to hold a smile back, as if she knew where I was coming from. But she had a teacher say, "Well, you gotta get this. If you don't get this, I gotta fail you." I said, "Well, I just don't see I can help a black man in America." And like the whole class looked at me, you know, what is he talking about? Because everybody else was doing it. Of course, I made an A. She said, "You gotta make an A on a semester to pass, else I gotta fail you."
Yes.
And I made the A, the only one in the class. But you know, it was just a magnetic reality that's attracted me to the Nation of Islam. The reality of just doing for self, and I saw a group from a distant group of proud, black men and women, unquote. Let me ask you this,
Imam Sharif. When Imam Muhammad picked up the flag, what kind of statement was that that you saw in that?
That really was the epitome of a pride in serving. You know, I was proud to be a Marine, per se. I guess all Marines are. But when Imam Muhammad picked up that flag, he picked up something in me. At one point, I was kind of a disenchanted with the military, not because of the Nation of Islam. It just caused my experience in Vietnam and the post-Vietnam effect upon returning to America. Really how veterans were treated. The VA impact upon treatment of veterans who had medical problems, et cetera. I just turned against the military to re myself, not because of Nation of Islam. At one point, I threw my medals in the trash.
Mm.
And it was my wife. Something just hit me one day. I said, you know, I'm tired of this. I won't say what I said. This is so, you know what a guy would say. And
I
threw my medals in the trash. And my wife, she didn't tell me, but she saw me. She knew something was wrong, but not telling me, she went and took my medals out of the trash. I just said, you know. And it was several years later she told me, I took them out of the trash. I knew something. I couldn't tell what was wrong, but something made you mad. And I had a Purple Heart, but I had two presidential unit citations that I received with Secretary of 26 Marines. It was just I can't really explain it right now, but when he picked up that flag, it just kind of turned my heart around and caused me to regroup and rethink and kind of untie that knot that was in my heart, you know, about America and the military per se. So, and I think I may have showed you the newspaper.
Yes.
And I said, you know, this is what our leader did. He picked up the American flag, so I got to pick it up, you know. And that was a big turnaround for me. My feeling about the military in America.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, that's one of the things that did inspire me. I mentioned earlier that my uncle was the one that helped me to look at the military, and that's one of the things that he shared with me. But certainly as a teenager at the time, when that happened, we were thinking about things that we were going to do, and I was looking at other things, but that helped direct me to, I was inspired by his enthusiasm, and hopefully some of the radio listening audience can hear the enthusiasm about what that meant. But that, in me as a young person, seeing that in someone that I highly respected,
Well, she was definitely someone I respected. And so and I ended up spending, drawing as soon as I can, which was in 1979, and then the rest is history. And so just let me ask my son-in-law who's on the phone here, did that have my service in the Air Force and you, did that have any bearing on you? My uncle influenced me. Did I influence you at all, being in the Air Force uniform, to go in the Air Force? Fontel.
Most definitely. I don't know if you recall, but at the time I was had just finished my first associate's degree, and you know we had some conversations about going out, seeing the world, and you know in the service. And I always saw you come, you know, home in your uniform and everything, and you made it fit, you know, regardless of what I might have heard about Muslims in the military or the military separate from the Muslims. I saw that you made it fit, you know. And it worked out well, and it seemed like it was a part of you. And being a part of you, it made you happy, you know. So that, you know, helped me make a decision to join. But, you know, if you reflect back on some time while I was in, you know, I called you several times about several things. And
right, that was Paul.
Right, and, of course, we had some situations. You had those who really did not want to respect, you know, the rights of other religions. And you still do, right? And it shows up in different forms of fashion. I mean, at the time, you know, I had a civilian who was over the shop, and he retired 30 years, and he really just did not want to let me exercise my religious freedom of going to Juma when there are clear DOD directives and Air Force instruction that says I can. And after, you know, speaking with him several times, he was denying me, then I called you. And I remember what you told me. You said you can handle this or I can handle it. So I said, know what? No, I'm going to handle this. I said, just, you know, kept guiding. And then you sent me over a copy of the DOD directives, and you sent me over a copy of the AFI, you know, and then, you know, you gave me a little bit of history about, you know, things that have happened and how, you know, we've overcame these situations. But, you know, alhamdulillah, I was able to take that and take it to his commander, and immediately, before I can get all the words out of my mouth, his commander told me, no, he's wrong, you go to Juma. And that allowed, you know, others to feel which I didn't realize there were other people that were Muslim. They were just little bashful about going to Juma because they didn't know how they could articulate to folks over them that they wanted to go to a press service or do something different than them, you know. So
yeah,
I was able to go, and it was able to serve as a segue or as a median for other folks to be able to speak up, you know, and exercise your religious freedom to go to service.
Yeah, so you just hit something good, important point in terms of the support that you received. So I want to go to Lyndon a minute. And Lyndon, you mentioned, and I know we were part of this as well, there was a time we didn't have any chaplains. There were some organizations created. Can you talk about those organizations and what made them important for Muslim service members?
Are you referring to, like, Muslim military members?
Yes.
And, Muslim military members, again, that was a situation that Allah brought us all together at one particular time, right after the, or during and after the, Desert Storm, Desert Shield era. And at that time, there was, you know, a lot of talk about Islam, the Islamic, for lack of a better term, Islamic movement in this country was growing and you know, growing fast. And so, you know, this Muslim military member organization, you know, again, our first objective priority was to get Muslim chaplains into the armed forces because, as Imam Muhammad put it, if the other religions have them, we should have them too. This is our country.
Right.
And
right.
And then later, after there were Muslim chaplains in, Imam Abdul Rashid being the first, and then there were Brother Noel in the Navy and some others. I think last I heard there were at least 10 or more. But around 1998, I think you were in Colorado somewhere, and we formed an organization called the Muslim American Military Association.
Yes.
This was at MMM had sort of went to its logical conclusion, and you know, it was no longer a group that was keeping it together. So the Muslim American Veteran Association started around 1997, and that was
so
started
next year,
by.
Next year will be the 20th anniversary of the Muslim American Veteran Association. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You said 1997, so yeah,
right.
20
right.
years.
Yes, and we still got a lot of work to do. But
yes, and but so,
it's
not where you were 20 years ago.
Work. Yeah.
So now we have how many folks are there in the nation now?
I would say there's at least 12 or more. I get emails all the time through our Facebook page through our website of brothers wanting to join an organization like the one I got yesterday. A brother in Florida wants to know if there's a MAVA post out there. But we don't have one there. We have some brothers and some military or veterans there, but we need them to step up to the plate and, start putting together the organization there. And so we have veterans all over the country, you know, and
well,
can
you be other than a Muslim to join the Muslim American Veterans Association?
Well, you can join, but you can't hold a leadership position unless you are a Muslim, but non-Muslims are welcome to join as long as they support our objectives and our goals. You know, we have a set of bylaws to regulate the organization. And we also accept non-military members and, you know, in an auxiliary support form, too.
Yes, yes. So all can benefit from it, regardless of what your branch of service or regardless of what your religion is. All benefit from the service of the Muslim American Veterans Association. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
Let me ask you.
That's what we're about to benefit the society.
Yes. Good. Good. I want you at this time, if you could, for some of those in the listening audience, if you could give the website that members can go to get more information, and if there are any Muslims or anybody who want to join. Also can get information to join. Could you give that website at this time?
It's mavanational.com, M-A-V-A national, one word, .com, and that will bring up our website. Then we are also on Facebook under Muslim American Veterans Association. That will come up, and it has both of them, there's a way of contacting myself and the organization with any questions or anything, you know, you want to correspond with. And as well as we've been blessed by Sister Aisha Mustafa of the Muslim Journal to have a weekly column in the Muslim Journal newspaper. And so
it's a very, very good
that's
column.
Another
we
way
really
of reaching out.
It. Yeah, we really appreciate that. Lenny, we know that MAVA is the first, which obviously that's saying it's the oldest Muslim American Veterans Association in America's history. Can you just briefly speak about the person that started this organization and what led to it?
Yeah, Brother Mujahid Muhammad, he was known in his early days as Warren Carter, but he was he served during the Korean War. He was from Virginia. I can't remember the name of the city off the top of my head, but he was a young man, and he went to Korea, got captured, and spent about 440-something days in captivity as a prisoner of war. And he lived in Philadelphia, went to Philadelphia when he got out, and he also started the first, I would say one of the first, if not the first, Boy Scout, Muslim Boy Scout troops there. And then he moved on to Washington, D.C., and in 1997, himself and a brother named Talib Deen Abdul Wakil, who was an Army lieutenant, major, retired, and Dr. Chris Bell, another retired Army major, they began the MAVA, the first post. We didn't have a national at that time, but they began the first post. And one of the things they wanted to do, because again, this was during the time of the
Iraq War.
So,
Brother Ma'am, we have two minutes.
One moment, Leonard. Go ahead,
yeah.
Go ahead, co-host Bynum.
Yes, Brother Imam, we only have a minute and a half before we are going to have to close out.
Okay, yeah, we're running, we're getting ready to close it out. I do want to ask Imam Abdul Rahman Sharif a question before we get ready to do some wrap-up comments. Imam Sharif, you are also a member of MAVA, and you're on the board there, but also you are on a non-Muslim service organization. Can you tell us the name of that organization and what you do for that organization?
Well, presently, I'm active in the Vietnam Veterans of America, which right now, according to the chart, is the only veterans service group that's actually been funded by Congress. And I'm presently serve as a chaplain and also minority affairs.
You're a Muslim, a part of a veterans organization that's not a Muslim organization, and you're a chaplain for that organization.
Yeah, I'm a chaplain of that organization.
How did that happen? How did you become a chaplain of a non-Muslim veterans organization?
Well, for some reason, they started asking what I like to offer a prayer. You know, we say dua, but I said yes. And after a couple of times, they said, "Would you like to be the chaplain?" And I was just voted in as chaplain. Since that time, we've had 3 elections, and I've been reelected each time.
30 seconds, brother.
I sit on the board of directors. You know, I do a monthly. We do a monthly newsletter, and I put a little blurb in about, you know, just things, good words from our perspective, Muslim perspective that everybody can identify with. And, you know, we open and close with dua.
20 seconds, brother. Email.
Okay. Yeah, that says a whole lot about how we have the same soul. If they, obviously, you said things that were universal. So we certainly appreciate you, Imam Sharif. Obviously, that says a whole lot about you, about your character. I want to thank you for being on the show. Definitely want to thank Imam. He's also assistant at the Nation of Mosques as well as Marvin and other things. I want to thank Leonard Bilal for your service and for your being with us today, for taking time on your schedule. And Fontel Gibbons, also my son-in-law, I want to thank you for your time and your service for being with us today. And I'm going to turn it over now to our co-host, Bynum, Bilal Bynum, to close us out.
Liberating strife. yourself. Yeah, country loved. Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Now, wait a minute. I'm talking about America. Sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white t-shirt? Who told you you love your black preachers? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation, would make a better society.
And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?